Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel. I'm joined by our managing editor, J.J. Cooper, here in the podcast nook at Baseball America World Headquarters in the Research Triangle Park / Durham, North Cackalack. Thanks so much for the download. J.J. and I still have WBC fever. We filled out two different kinds of brackets here in March, a very different March Madness, the kind that really does catch up to you when you stay up and watch the West Coast games from the West. And before we really get started with podcast proper, I want to thank our correspondents who've covered this tournament for us, from Wayne Grasick in Japan to Larry Milson in Toronto to Juan Rodriguez and Mike Berardino in Florida to the guy who had the most enviable job all week, Kurt Kenny out in San Diego. And let's just think about what Kurt Kenny has seen in the last week.
In a week.
And what he's going to see again tonight, JJ. He starts off by this guy basically for a living right now is covering Steven Strasburg. He's doing other things too, but Kirk's watching Steven Strasburg. And then he gets to watch the other best pitchers in the world who are not affiliated with major league organizations. And they pretty much all happen to be in San Diego this week. And unfortunately for Cuba, only one of them, really, was on the Cuban team. Albertine Chapman. Yes. He's got like three names. And the rest of them were on Japan and Korea. And that's why Japan and Korea, three teams enter the Terror Dome that was Petco Park this weekend in the World Baseball Classic.
Four teams enter. Three that we really thought had a chance
Four
to
teams
advance.
Enter, three really great teams, and two teams leave. And JJ, I'll start off the podcast. We have our tournament set. Kurt got to watch this great pool of death, Cuba, Korea, Japan, Mexico. And Mexico represented, and Mexico. They played well.
You put them in pool, they would have, you know.
And they could have competed with the U.S., yeah. There's no doubt. But let's put it in perspective. I think the key to me, the coolest thing that comes out of that pool is just the level of play. JJ, the question I got on our ESPN.com weekly chat was about what would those three teams, Korea, Cuba, Japan, how would they fare in a full major league season? I think I might have been on the high end a little bit by saying that I thought those teams were between 85 and 95 win teams just because they're pitching in defense, and Cuba because of its offense. But I think the main point is we saw three great teams playing a great baseball round robin, and one very worthy team, Cuba, had to go home.
Oh, the thing that I hope the World Baseball Classic is doing more than anything else is that there was always this thought that, you know, okay, there is a player or two over in Japan.
Right.
If they're lucky enough and good enough, then they can make the trip over and
right.
they can hold their own in the U.S.
Well, yeah, or their best players can certainly come
right.
over here.
But
they'll
you
be
know
good,
what?
But they won't
but
be the
you know
best
what?
Players
and
here.
And the Japan League, because of that, though, is a shadow
fail.
Of its former self.
Yeah, it's like
and,
early 50s Negro.
Right,
leagues.
And it's, you know, and it's just trying to survive.
Right.
What we saw, these are not, this is, you know, yes, there are major leaguers on the Japanese team.
Right.
There is a major leaguer or a former major leaguer or two on
the
Korean
team. Right.
Yeah,
the fact that Yung Bong is the number two pitcher for Korea does kind of make you say, wait a minute, is Korea really that good? But I think Yung Bong would be a pretty good pitcher in the major leagues.
The question is that Yung Bong basically, is he a better pitcher than we ever got to see, you know, now that he's had a couple more years to develop?
Very possible.
You know, but it's the thing that's fun about it is it's also a different game. I know we talked about this on the last podcast. It is a defense. It's a 1960s, 1970s,
yeah.
1980s, before the home run became everything in the U.S. kind of game.
It's that kind of game, and it's a tournament style. And so that immediacy, that level of immediacy is added to it. That's kind of like a hybrid for someone like me. It has elements of college baseball in it that I like to see. The intensity, the dogpile in March that the United States got to pull off. We haven't even talked much about the Team USA. Team USA and Venezuela have advanced.
And we'll get, yeah.
Frankly, we've been pretty obsessed with the other pool, the West Coast
pool. And frankly, we are the Baseball America because
pool.
David Wright's good.
Yeah.
He came up, you know, clutch hit, the game-winning hit for the U.S. But at Baseball America, you know, okay, it's not that we don't follow the major leagues.
Yeah.
But our interest in David Wright, you know, basically goes back to when, you know, he was coming out of Virginia and then,
right.
you know, okay, well, how
I mean,
good is he as,
right.
you know, when he has a breakthrough season
we,
and
we
they
released
ball.
Him to the wild like in 2004,
right.
you know.
These guys that we see for Japan, Korea, Cuba, you know, this is one of the rare chances you get as an American baseball fan.
Yeah.
I mean, we were talking about Yu Darvish. You know, we were talking about Yunjin, you know, Yu for
right.
Korea.
Right, right.
And then we watched Hisahi Iwakuma.
Iwakuma, against a guy we did not know much about.
I had a scout tell me he was really good, and that, you know, what do you think about him? I'm like, well, you know, man.
You're going to get something.
I see that, and it's like, I don't ever want to compare anyone to Greg Maddux, because Greg Maddux is his own kind of pitcher and all, and his repertoire is entirely different than Maddux. But I was impressed in that it was, in his fastball, actually better than Maddux was in his normal, you know, for the majority of Maddux's career. But it was a Maddux light-like performance in that it was a hit your spots, change your speeds, very good movement.
Yeah, he pitched. Yeah. He pitched, and he didn't go out there just to overpower the opponent. He could overpower the opponent. He could finesse the opponent. It was a tour de force against Cuba for Hisashi Iwakuma for Japan. And I think both of them, I mean, like the night before, I IM'd JJ and said, I'll bet you $5 Cuba wins that game. And you would not take the bet.
And that was nothing
against Japan. We just did not want to bet against Cuba with their backs against the wall. But Cuba played the role. And I know I do this a lot, but I've only got to see Cuba play in person twice. It was a decade ago. All the players, except for Ariel Pestano, basically, and Jorge Vera, have changed.
Lazo
was too. That's about.
No, I was going to say Lazo was about 72 at the time.
There might have been one or two other guys, but Cuba played just in that elimination game against Japan. It was just like the Ben Sheets game in the 2000 Olympic gold medal game. The U.S. got on top early. Japan got on top early. Not as early as the U.S. did. The U.S. got its run in the first inning with a Mike Neal home run off Pedro Lazo. But and it was Cuba falling behind on the error by Cespedes in center field. But that, the Cuba misplay, Japan taking the lead, and then Ariel Pestano blowing up the team in the middle of the game with the poor sportsmanship and the red ass that he's known for, being A.J. Pierzynski to the power of 10, they played exactly the way scouts have been telling us they play over the years. And it was just pretty unbelievable to watch Cuba play to form and really have uncompetitive at-bats against Iwakuma. And I don't want to... He pitched very well. He showed four pitches that were average to plus because the fastball command, the split. The slow curve was probably fringe average because really there's a spot curve.
It's really just something...
Well, the slider was dirty.
Yeah, and it was just something...
The slider
kind of
and the split
you.
Were dirty. I mean, those were both plus major league pitches. And that's Japan's third starter. And that's the key point here. That's Japan's third starter, and Korea has a pitcher in Yu who did not pitch well in that pool, but is their ace and can match up with anybody Japan has, can match up with anybody the U.S. has in a one-game situation. And that's the level that international baseball is at right now. I think Cuba has fallen behind because their pitching is not as good, JJ, but I think Korea and Japan, emphatically from the Olympics to WBC, the last two WBCs, has shown the level that baseball in Asia has come to, and we heard also in this tournament with the strides that China has made. Taiwan is a competitive
really
country,
a
but it has taken a step back. And yet, major league teams keep signing players from Taiwan.
Right.
I think it just tells you baseball in Asia, I think, is at a much higher level than Americans give credit to generally.
And with Cuba, you know, Cuba basically, you know, if you don't follow international baseball that closely, Cuba is international baseball.
Yeah,
U.S. can, you know, the U.S., it's the U.S., yeah. We may have invented the game, and hey, let's be honest with it, for 40 years,
yeah,
international baseball, when it came to international competitions,
didn't matter.
U.S. didn't pay attention.
Right.
To it. I mean, not that
USA baseball was only formed in, what, 1978, 1981,
right.
Somewhere
and
in that
it's
range.
Not to poo-poo what Cuba did, but the reality of it is that they were beating teams before that were not, you know, teams sending their best.
Yeah, the last time the U.S., an amateur team, had beaten Cuba in a competition that mattered really was 1967. And I'm going to break out an imitation here that no one will get. George Greer, from Wake Forest coach, played for UConn. Come on, RJ. So anyway, George Greer was the hitting hero for Team USA in the Pan Am Games in Winnipeg in 1967. That's like, there are so few occasions where the U.S. used to beat Cuba, or anybody who used to beat Cuba, international competition, that when it happened, it became like a little mini legend in those little circles, and George Greer was one of those.
But the reality of it now is that this is the worst stretch of international baseball that Cuba has had, basically, since Cuban baseball became Cuba baseball, which really is right around the time that Fidel Castro came to power. Since then, it's basically... It's really kind of come to the point where Cuba has its worst performance in an international tournament.
Yeah.
Here.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. But no, I think
if you go back, they didn't. You know, they made it to the championship game, but they didn't win the Olympics.
No, and they have, and they've done that since 2006 now, JJ. And that's the thing. You know, you're absolutely right. That's the worst stretch. This is the worst stretch Cuba ever. And that would have happened. You would have said that no matter what, if they had just by not making the semifinals in this tournament. But you go back to 2006 World Baseball Classic. They didn't win the Classic. They lost in the finals. That was still a very strong showing.
Very strong.
But then 2006 in the summer, Cuba hosted a lot of tournaments, international, amateur and professional, and they didn't even make the finals in the World Juniors that year, which people don't really care that much about. They didn't make the finals, I don't believe, in the college-level tournament, which they usually own, because the FISU tournament, the age limit goes up to 27, so there's several members of their actual national team playing on their college team. And then their professional team, the top-level team, lost to the U.S. 8-5 in the Olympic qualifying tournament championship game. Then in 07, the big event, there were other events, but the biggest one was the World Cup. The U.S. sends Colby Rasmus and Evan Longoria and a stud team, and they go to Taiwan and beat Cuba in the finals. 2008, Cuba beats the U.S. in the medal round, Steven Strasburg, and they kind of pounded him, but they lost in the championship game to Korea. And now, again, they don't even get to the semifinals in this event.
The last big tournament Cuba won is
a 2005 World Cup, which was played in the Netherlands. And really, frankly, wasn't a great tournament.
It sent an indie ball team, basically.
They basically were six-year free agents, and then the Mets gave them Lastings Millage and Brian Bannister.
Oh, yeah, that was that team, yeah.
And the U.S. and Cuba did play in the round of eight, and Brian Bannister did start the game, and Davey Johnson was the manager, and Cuba destroyed Brian Bannister, which I believe led to the Ambiorix-Burgos trade, actually. Not really.
But no, the point is that... And if you compare that stretch with any other team in international baseball,
it's better.
You know, now,
except for Korea. Actually.
If Korea wins this, Korea's better.
Oh, no doubt.
You know,
no doubt.
Because everyone forgets first World Baseball Classic.
Korea had the best record.
Korea had the best record of any team in it.
Yeah, they were undefeated until they got to the semifinals and lost. I mean, they only had one loss in the whole event.
Right. So, you know, but the thing about it is that Cuban baseball has been at such a high level that Cuban baseball used to dominate international competition. You can't dominate if you don't win.
I mean, let's think
about
it.
We're basically coming up on 5 years,
yeah,
4 years at least, yeah, since Cuba has won a significant, major international tournament.
Where every other team tried as hard as they are.
Right.
And it's not for lack of talent. Cuba does still have, I think you watch their lineup and you see, there's seven or eight everyday big leaguers in that lineup.
There are guys on their bench who can play the big
leagues. And I don't think there's a doubt that, I don't think Michelle Enriquez, for example, should hit three hole for Cuba. And I don't think he's a big leaguer because he doesn't profile, but he can hit. I mean, Osmani Urrutia did not even make this Cuban national team. He's hit 400 like seven of the last 10 years in the Cuban national series. I mean, As you said to me,
their backup, they've got their third string catcher.
Their second and third string catcher can play shortstop for Team USA better than Derek Jeter. I'm not kidding. That's just, they're that athletic. I mean, that's setting the bar fairly low. That's another subject we're going to get to later in the podcast. But I've said it before, and I really think this is the biggest key. This stretch of Cuban futility, such as it is tied into the fact they don't have a number one ace starter. They have a number one arm in Chapman. He's not there yet.
He's not polished enough. He's not
right.
He's basically not.
He's not old enough.
He's not
refined
enough.
And the thing is, he can
throw really hard, but he can't always. I mean, as we saw in that game against Japan, he can't find the plate necessarily.
When Jose Contreras was his age, El Duque and Rolando Arojo and Levon Hernandez were the aces, and Norge Vera and Ciro Lissay were challenging Contreras for that ace spot. Now Vera's 37, Lissay's 37, Lazo's 36, 37. They don't have an ace. Between Contreras defecting and that, there's like a little lost generation there in the middle. And there have been pitchers like Vicio Hondry Odelin has shown some stretches.
Miles Rodriguez was supposed to be the guy.
That's where I was headed. The guy who would be their number one guy was Miles Rodriguez. He was hitting 100 miles an hour in the Olympics. He was 19. That was in 2000. He'd be in the prime of his career right now. But they got worried he was going to defect. He tried to defect. He didn't defect. Then they said, "You try to defect, I will kill your shoulder." And they started him four games out of a seven-game playoff series. He's never been the same, even when he did defect. And that's it, JJ. In my mind, if Miles Rodriguez stay with Miles Rodriguez, none of this ever happens. Cuba is still dominant. That's given respect to Korea and Japan.
But like, all they needed was if they'd have matched Iwakuma pitch for pitch.
Correct. Or if they'd been able to try to match Daisuke pitch for pitch.
Right.
And wait him out. They could have done that. But that's what's missing for Cuba. They've never replaced Jose Contreras. I've said it, and I'm still saying it. They still haven't replaced Contreras, and that's why I think Cuba's hitters are as good or better than they ever have been. They don't have a Linares, but they have four or five guys who are studs.
Yeah.
I mean, Cespedes and Despaigne and Cepeda, that outfield is a big league outfield. It's impressive.
You throw in
Goriel, you throw in Oliveira at second base. Leslie Anderson, their first baseman, that guy was a stud. I mean, Leslie Anderson, I don't know if he's Lars Anderson, but he's close. He's not far off, and we put Lars Anderson on the cover, and Leslie Anderson was their backup. Their talent level is impressive, but on the mound, Cuba's short, and they don't have that go-to guy, and it affects them. And the reason, JJ, that I think you and I both think that Japan is the favorite going to L.A., and a couple nights ago I still was saying Korea, and Korea's defense is amazing, and they do have Hun Jin Yu, and they do have Young Bong, and they do have an amazing bullpen, Lim, their closer from the right side, was outstanding. I'm the biggest non-Asian fan of Tae Kong Chong you're going to find. I love that guy. But they don't have what Japan has. Between Iwakuma, Yu Darvish, and Daisuke Matsuzaka, they have three stud starters, pitching great, experience in this event, and ready to go. And I think that's going to be too much for other teams to overcome.
The key is that the big difference, and you know, we both kind of agree, the U.S., I mean, is an underdog going into this.
I think the U.S. will be the four seed.
Right. At best, maybe the three.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, I mean, not making excuses. I mean, like, you know, I'm an American. Let me make this clear.
Sure, sure.
But watching this tournament, I mean, I want to go buy a blue jersey, you know. I mean,
yeah, I think I'm ready to go wear some Korea. I want some blue Thunder sticks, is really what I want, or cheer sticks, whichever brand they are.
That being said, the Japanese team, the Korean, South Korean team, they are playing in midseason form.
Yeah, they're playing a very entertaining brand of baseball.
But they're in midseason form. Whereas the U.S. is going to go into this, and basically, obviously there have been a lot of injuries, but beyond that, they're going to have to, they don't have a choice. Jake Peavy is going to go back out there.
They better hope.
And they hope that Jake Peavy has not just a little more than he had the last time he went out there. They better hope that that was a dead arm and it's back.
They better hope he has a little Cal Eldred syndrome going on there.
Because basically, ugly. If you look at it, I mean, if you match up Peavy, you know, hey, Roy Oswalt, and now he's still not been as effective in this tournament as the Japanese, you know.
But he is a
3.85 ERA, I think, in the tournament. I mean,
he's at the level in my mind of any pitcher in this event. I mean, Roy Oswalt is a true major league ace. He's got midseason caliber stuff. I don't think he has quite his midseason form, his midseason touch and feel and command. But I do, if I'm in the United States and I had a game to win, I put the ball in his hands.
Right. But the problem is, they don't have a choice, though. Jake Peavy's going to go. They got to win two. You're not going to go to Ted Lilly, and you're not going to go to Jeremy Guthrie.
No, you're not. You're absolutely not. And the U.S., so let's talk about the U.S. a little bit here, JJ. Chipper Jones, gone. Dustin Pedroia, gone. Kevin Youkilis, gone. Who am I leaving out? Tons of pitchers.
Matt Lindstrom, gone.
Good
Ryan
riddance.
Braun, hopefully coming back.
Ryan Braun possibly coming back, but this is probably the U.S. lineup. They're running Mark DeRosa over to first now. Brian Roberts, if you're going to lose Dustin Pedroia, Brian Roberts is a really nice little pickup. Let's hope, cross my fingers, Jimmy Rollins at shortstop.
I don't think anyone who really is rooting for America to win this is screaming, please play J-Row for two games.
And that is a tough one for Davey Johnson and for Paul Seiler and for Bob Watson and all those guys. How do you finesse that? How do you tell Derek Jeter, yeah, we put you out front for this entire event, now take a back seat?
And by the way, really, and you can make the argument that does your best lineup even have Jeter in it? Because you really, Dunn's been a really key hitter for them in this.
Oh, I don't know if they can afford to not have Adam Dunn in the lineup.
And could you afford to have Adam Dunn in the field?
Here's the question. Who do you rather have in the lineup, Adam Dunn or Jared Jeter? Who do you rather have in the lineup, Ryan Braun or Derek Jeter? Then, who do you rather have, Shane Victorino or Derek Jeter? That's really what you got. That's really what it comes down to. But because their outfield is David Wright or Evan Longoria at third, and probably Longoria if Wright's toe is messed
right.
up.
And,
I mean,
and
the
that's
most,
tough, that's
this is the second most watched toe in America right now for Taiwan Lawson. Brian McCann, Chris Iannetta, they're fine behind the plate. Iannetta swinging a hot stick. North Carolina represent. I'll pop the jersey for that. You know, but their outfield right now is a melange. Ryan Braun, who's battling an injury. Adam Dunn, who is battling his glove. Mark DeRosa, who has to play first base now. Curtis Granderson, who's probably your center fielder. And then the X Factor is the flying Hawaiian, Shane Victorino. I'll be honest with you, JJ. I think I'd rather have Shane Victorino than Jeets right now in every way but at the plate. At the plate, so if you think you need offense, I think you put Jeets at DH. But if you want defense, even if you want defense, you have to put, if Ryan Braun can go, you have to put Braun in left, Victorino in right, Granderson in center, and Dunn at DH.
But
especially
if
you're playing in Dodger Stadium.
But what they're going to do, Victorino's going to sit.
I think you're right.
Because the reality of it is that, and it's because it's a defensible decision.
Oh, well, certainly.
But the problem is on this is really, if Wright's okay to go, I mean, that's the other tough one in that you really want Wright and Longoria both in that lineup.
And I'll say it again. I know it won't happen. I'd put Jeter at first base, even though you'd be losing DeRosa. I'd put Jeter at first base because DeRosa is the perfect bench guy for a team like this that's so short.
He'll be the only bench
guy. He's the
guy
only bench guy. And like,
he can play everywhere.
It's going to be like 1990 Citadel where like they'd make a change. And I wasn't there, but Jim Cowell tells the story all the time. They had one reserve. And when they made a pitching change, everyone just changed positions. And that was the last time before Matt Wieters was in the College World Series that a catcher caught and pitched. And now, of course, we've had it back-to-back College World Series, or two of the last three, with Matt Wieters and Buster Posey catching and pitching in the same game. I'm just all over the place. I love the Cut World Baseball Classic. It brings all my tastes together into one event. It's awesome.
Now, we were talking about this a little bit before we started the podcast. Looking at it, okay, so Saturday we're going to have Korea versus Venezuela.
And that is a pretty intriguing game.
That's a great, I mean, for all we talk about Korea, I mean, Venezuela easily can win that game.
And here's the best thing about this. In the first round, we talked about how embarrassing it was for the Republica Dominicana to lose to the Netherlands, and it was. And last time, in the last classic, I think I get this question a lot internationally. The Dominican and Venezuela just aren't competitive in international baseball. They don't have strong national federations. They don't have strong amateur programs. Their best players are signed at ages 16 and 17 by North American franchises and brought to the United States. Even Japan has teams that have Dominican academies and sign players like Alfonso Soriano, like Robinson Chaco 12 years ago for Peter Gamez aficionados. They sign players, young Dominican players, out of Latin America, just like American teams do. So in 06, the Dominican had a great World Baseball Classic, got to the semifinals, was upset by Cuba. Here, when Pedro Lazo got out David Ortiz, when he was a go-ahead run, I don't know if people remember that. That was a great, because Ortiz had hit a bomb off Cuba in the round robin, and then after a big exchange, a heated exchange with Arnold Pestano, had one of the best bat flips of all time. I still love that. But now, so the Dominican had its moment in the WBC in 06. Now Venezuela, having its moment, intertwined with the politics, with Manuel Ordóñez getting booed by Venezuelan Americans for his support of Hugo Chavez. The whole thing is delicious. And we haven't even talked about all these other pitchers, JJ. Right now, Felix Hernandez is throwing as well as any of them.
Although, the problem with Felix is going to be what Iwakuma did that
right.
was so
That's
impressive was is that Iwakuma, with these pitch limits we have.
Early count outs.
With Iwakuma, you were sitting there for a little while, and I was trying to run the numbers in my head. I was like, could he somehow throw a complete game on 85?
He could have, I think.
You know, now, they pulled him at 70 so that he could make sure that he would be back for
69
pitches. But Felix may dominate, but he'll probably dominate and still be done after five.
And this is a 100-inning pitch limit, 100-pitch limit now for the final. It's either 100 or 105. It might even be up to 110. Which I think is designed just for the Cubans, but he's got a higher pitch limit.
He's got a higher pitch limit.
He's a 6-inning guy at most, though, I agree, because he's so much more of a power pitcher.
What they have, though, is that their bullpen, conceivably, I mean, it's just if they can get
this
through
This is not Puerto Rico's bullpen.
Yeah, if they can get through the 7th and 8th, then, they're...
Let's face it, if Puerto Rico, honestly, I think if Puerto Rico had been able to pull Roberto Hernandez out of mothballs, even at age 43, and limbered him up a little bit, I think they would have beat the United States. They had to beat the United States to protect the lead with a tired J.C. Romero and Fernando Cabrera, and that's why the United States advanced. And kudos to the U.S., because it didn't give up. but a better bullpen for Puerto Rico, and Puerto Rico wins that game, and Venezuela does not have that problem.
And Venezuela, though, is a better team in a two games to win it all scenario than they are. They've gotten through the rough part for
them. That's
right. Because their starting pitching depth is pretty weak.
And they do have, and also they still have some chaff on this team. Hey, they have Victor Zambrano.
Thankfully for them, though, has probably made his last start
in the
WBC.
They have, like, Victor Moreno and Ivan Blanco and Orber Moreno. It's not a deep pitching staff.
Let me make clear. They've got to get Felix, when he goes out there, has to give them innings.
I think he has to give them six against Korea.
And then Carlos Silva will do
the
other one. If it's not him,
Armando Galarraga, I'm not sure what Venezuela's plans are to be their number two starter.
I would think you got to go Silva, especially.
I agree.
He's got more stuff, and he's been basically more consistent.
He's pitched very well in this event. WeFit worked for Carlos Silva this offseason. He's one of the pitchers who, because he lost a lot of weight this offseason using WeFit.
But then you got
K-Rod.
But the thing for Venezuela is that they have the lineup. If they win, Japan and South Korea are aiming to win 3-0, 3-2.
Yeah, Venezuela's hoping to win like 8-6.
Right.
And they want to win 8. They want to be winning 8-6 going into the 8th, and then they want K-Rod for a 4, 5, or 6 out save, which frankly is awesome. And K-Rod has been one of the most amazing guys in this event. He has looked phenomenal. He's thrown better in the Classic than I ever saw him throw the last couple of years for the Angels. Granted, I don't watch a ton of Angels games, but it seems like when you watch him later in the year on some of these ESPN Sunday night games, he's topping out a 93 and throwing all slider, slider, slider. He's been blowing people away with fastballs in this event, JJ. It's awesome.
So
it's really fun.
But you look at it, so you've got them, you know, Saturday, Korea versus Venezuela, Sunday, Japan, the U.S., and the one last thing is we wrap up this. Japan is an interesting decision. Like, how they've set up their pitching staff, logically, it would be Matsuzaka's time to go. He started earlier. He's had more rest than Darvish, Ori, or Kuba.
Because it's Venezuela, South Korea on Saturday, Japan, U.S. Sunday.
I think we both agree, if I'm Japan, even if he's my number one, like, you know, my ace, and hey, Matsuzaka in international play? Is a different Matsuzaka. This is the Matsuzaka that we, you know.
This is the crazy thing is, Matsuzaka international play, not so hot. Matsuzaka in the World Baseball Classic, amazing.
Yeah.
Because of the Olympics, this guy's actually not been so good.
Right.
But in the World Baseball Classic, he has been money. And I think it would be kind of poetic, actually, if he World Baseball Classic final in 06, World Baseball Classic in 09.
But
in
we both agree that, why would you, if you're Japan, why would you let the U.S. face a guy who...
The one guy they've all faced.
Not all of them, but at least a good bit of them.
Yeah.
And can watch, you know, all this scouting video that they have, you know, and all this. Why would you not have him go against... And we both agree, I think, ideally, if you're the Japan, send Iwakuma out there, who's not going to blow guys away as much as he's going to mess with their heads. It's good, very good stuff.
Yeah.
But he's going to paint corners... He's going to basically never let you lock in on anything.
He's been their most efficient pitcher. I mean, he's thrown in the bullpen. He started. He was very impressive against Cuba.
And then you have kind of basically in reserve, you have Yu Darvish to come in, who, again, the U.S. has not seen, and rear back and throw 97, 98, and throw his six other pitches. And that's got to be a scary thought if you're the U.S., that those two back-to-back, you know. And, hey, it's a one game.
Yeah.
We're not saying the U.S. can't win this because they're two wins away.
Hey, Darvish lost. Darvish lost to Korea, and Korea did exactly what they needed to do against Yu Darvish. He was wild early, and they were aggressive, and they capitalized with aggressive base running. They shortened
up. They got on it early because after that first inning, then it was like, we don't have a chance against
this guy.
That
was over. That was as over as Kansas against North Carolina last year. It was Yu Darvish's performance the last four innings of his start. Extremely impressive, and yet I think I agree with you. I think Iwakuma is the better option for Japan against the U.S. So I'm thinking it's going to be all Asia final, JJ. And that's no disrespect to Venezuela. I think Venezuela's lineup is very good, but Venezuela and Korea, real clash of styles there. Venezuela's trying to bludgeon you with the Detroit, a third of the Detroit Tigers lineup with Bangley Ordonez and Carlos Guillen. There's one other Tiger on that team. I forget. Miguel Cabrera. So those three guys. Basically, and their orchestra against Korea's pitching, defense, and the mind wizardry of In-Sik Kim, the Korean manager.
And who's just amazing.
He's amazing.
He's basically Casey Stengel's hunches times 10. That's right. Like, oh, we're going to put him on the line.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll play our outfielders where they're basically one step from the wall.
And he seems to make every right pitching call, too. He's been very good, as opposed to, I'll say, Eugenio Velez for Cuba, who I thought was quick on the hook other times. Other times, way too slow on the hook and way too slow to get guys warmed up. It's a different style. I think it affected Cuba. I don't think they were quite up to they weren't quite as on their games as Japan and Korea were.
But before we wrap up, the one thing we do need that's going to hurt Japan is Murata, their third baseman, who's one of the top power hitters in Japan, basically, is out for the... He pulled his hammy last night in a game that really should not exist.
I mean, that's a problem.
Talking about how to revamp the World Baseball Classic, none of these teams, if you make it to the semis...
No more games for seeding.
Right, because no one really cares. And we've seen David Wright basically screwed up a toe.
Yeah.
Shuichi Murata, sorry if I mispronounced that.
Shuichi Murata, yes.
Screwed up a hammy, and he's out for the finals.
Japan has four home runs in the series, and he's hit two of them. So that just tells you they're losing a key bat in their lineup. And as their manager said last night, it's an injury, and it's a major one, and he will not play. And how easily do they replace somebody? You know, how is there a Japanese position player in the United States?
Yeah, or
I think they already have them all on the roster. They have Ichiro. They have Jojima. They have Aki Iwamura. Is there another Japanese position player in the U.S.?
You got Fukudome. He's already there, too.
Fukudome's already there.
And you're looking for an... But you're also... You're looking for a third baseman.
An infielder.
First baseman.
So it's not like you can just say, hey, Sotoguchi, come on over. I still want to see Tsuyoshi Shinjo, just to see Shinjo.
I want to see him descend out of the rafters. Yes.
Oh, I'm going to have to go to YouTube Friday. I'm going to have to go see some Shinjo videos.
But
it's a big loss for Japan. Now, you're right. So the United States is not the only team that's going into this tournament. Into the
Although the U.S. is definitely...
They have the worst
injury
issues.
They're limping more than anyone
else. And it's just another example of why American players need to long toss more and train more like the Japanese. Just thought I'd sneak that in. But great podcast. JJ, your pick, are you picking Japan?
Yeah, I really gone back and forth. But, I mean, I do think that the great thing about this is four of the top five teams in this tournament are in the finals.
I agree. I think the U.S. was probably the fifth best team.
You know,
I think so. I think they were better than Puerto Rico.
The thing about it is we're not slamming the U.S. The U.S. players, nothing against them. Look, the U.S. team put together the best team they could from the players who agreed to play.
I think a different time of year, the U.S. would be two, or three. I think American baseball is better than Korean baseball. I think it's better than Japanese baseball.
But
I think in general, it's probably a little bit better than Cuban baseball.
Yeah. Oh, and
I do.
Depth, there's no question.
I mean, at the college level of late, the United States college team has been beaten. Cuba team beaten everybody in the world, basically.
But
and the junior level, very competitive, with Korea being the other team that's right there.
The thing about it is that the U.S. players have made no bones about this. Like, Jake Peavy, Davey Johnson had to keep him in there because, he needs the innings.
Yeah.
The U.S. is treating this like an exhibition that they want to win, whereas Japan and Korea are treating this, if a guy sits buried on the bench and he made his first appearance of the tournament yesterday,
that's right.
They don't care.
They don't care.
This is about winning the tournament, and by the way, we'll figure out how to get, well, in their case, actually, well, it's okay. He's been throwing, 100 pitches every day for, 2 months now, so he's ready for the season.
And the great thing is that for the United States, position player-wise, the U.S. doesn't need all of its best guys out there. That lineup they're going to throw out there, those are very competitive lineups. Hey, if Shane Victorino's hitting 8-hole but playing right field for you, yeah, that's still a pretty good team. He's a starter on a championship-caliber American World Series championship team. He's shown that with the Phillies. I mean, he's a good player. Is he the best? Is he one of our 28 best guys? No, he's not. But he's pretty good.
But you know what, also, and we really got to wrap this up, but it is something where you don't, and you see this with the Korean and Japanese team, it's not, you don't put together an all-star team here.
You put together a team.
You put together a team.
Where it really is hurting the United States is on the mound. Even in the bullpen, the United States is not anywhere near its best. You'd feel a lot better if they had Joe Nathan back there and a couple other guys like that. But I'm also picking Japan. I think it's going to be an all-Asia final, Japan and Korea. And
if they do, man, that will be the most intense game of the year.
Oh, it'll be on.
It'll be the most intense game of the year. And I mean, and basically both teams, they both put their little flags they've planted in the mounds the last week.
That's awesome.
I'm imagining, basically like one of those flags that hangs over a skyscraper. It'll drape the entire infield that they'll plant in the mound.
I think any of these four teams that wins, the celebration will be a little bit more over the top than small flag planted on the pitcher's mound. That'll be pretty great. But it's been a great tournament so far. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you've enjoyed our podcast about it, because JJ and I, we got the fever, and the only cure is more classic.
And more cowbell. With Cubans, we're still here. We get a little more cowbell.
Absolutely. I'd love it. So for JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Thanks so much for the download. We'll be back next week with another Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.